from WBUR Boston. I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. It is, as of today, the year of the dragon. It's a big, powerful year in Chinese astrology. Chinese communities around the world are celebrating with firecrackers, dragon dances, and the color red, all set to bring prosperity for the coming year. They're feasting with their families, putting out flowers, getting fortunes told. The stories and customs around Chinese New Year go back thousands of years. Astrology, divination, and old traditions are very much alive in Chinese culture today with a fully modern twist. This hour on point, tradition and modernity in the year of the dragon. Behind me, right there, drumming and dancing from last night's huge New Year Spring Festival celebration on Chinese TV, CCTV in China. You can join our conversation today. Chinese Americans, are you celebrating the Lunar New Year? Feasting with the family, getting your fortune told? Do you pay attention to the old traditions? Do you see Chinese astrology as superstition or ancient wisdom? You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. We will hear in this hour from the great Chinese-American writer Gish Jen and more. Joining me first from San Francisco is Jonathan H.X. Lee, Assistant Professor of Asian American Studies at San Francisco State, co-editor of the Encyclopedia of Asian American Folklore and Folk Life. Jonathan Lee, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you, Tom.
And with us from Santa Barbara, California, is Yuntai Huang, professor of English at the University of California, Santa Barbara, author of Charlie Chan, The Untold Story of the Honorable Detective and His Rendezvous with American History. Yuntai Huang, welcome back to the show. Happy Year of the Dragon, Mr. Huang.
Hi, Tom. Yeah, thank you. Xin
nian kuai le. Gong hei fa choy. It's great to have you both with us. Jonathan Lee, let me come first to you. Here we are. We look at Chinese media last night where it's not called the New Year in China, but the Spring Festival. Nevertheless, It's huge, and you've got the biggest annual migration of humans on the planet as workers in urban areas go to visit their families in other areas of the country. I mean, this is still, after all the history of China and Cultural Revolution, this is still an enormous day in the year of the Chinese calendar, Jonathan Lee.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it is.
And this, the year of the dragon, the biggest of all in the zodiac. Why?
Well, the dragon is the fifth year of the zodiac, but it's biggest because the dragon is considered the most auspicious. Being the most auspicious, it can bring the most fortune, the most prosperity to individuals, to family, to the country.
Yuntai Huang, have you been celebrating the New Year with your family or tuning in to the celebrations in China?
Well, absolutely. I just came back from New York last night, and a Chinese restaurant in my neighborhood adopted me. So I joined the staff members and had a feast, certainly. And I got a red pocket as well.
A red pocket, that is the red envelope, Lai Si in Cantonese, with the cash. That's usually for kids, isn't it? Adults giving kids a little cash.
Well, when they adopted me, of course.
Oh, I see.
As a guest.
Then you're the honorable adopted child or guest there.
Exactly, yes.
Oh, that's very nice. And what was on the menu last night, if I may be so bold as to ask?
Oh, it's traditional Chinese, food. But I just want to say that this dragon, Chinese are usually so-called descendants of the dragon. And there's another reason that the year of dragon is so important. This is the year of Chinese in many ways.
Descendants of the dragon, what? Sometimes it's the line is drawn all the way back to the Emperor Huang Di, who sort of pulled together the Chinese nation.
That's right.
He was supposed to be the son of a dragon, and that's the reason Chinese are usually. And there's this song by Hou Dejian, a very famous Taiwanese singer and composer. It's called The Descendants of the Dragon.
As sort of a way of thinking about or referring to the Chinese people. Jonathan Lee in San Francisco, for our listeners who are not very plugged into this whole realm, in your view, how is the Chinese zodiac, let's just start there, how is it like and unlike, the astrological signs that a lot of Americans may know, Pisces and Virgo and Leo? Americans sort of jokingly refer to those. Some take them more seriously and look at the astrological, daily report in the newspaper. But here you've got different years. Chinese born in these different years, Year of the Dragon, which comes every 12 years, or whether it's tiger or rabbit or ox or rat or snake or dog and so on, They're supposed to have different character. Is this more or less like Western astrological signs?
It's very similar, and I think a lot of the characteristics and traits of these animals can come through in terms of the folklore behind how the 12 were selected. But I think for in the West, it might be more of a hobby. But I think for the Chinese, it's actually more than just a hobby. They are symbols and archetypes that represent specific behaviors and characters and personality traits and psychology. And knowledge of this allows one to maximize one's life potential to reach one's destiny. So it's taken very seriously by the Chinese population.
The characteristics in these different years. So if you look at, let's say, Tiger, that was 2010. Ambitious, courageous, warm-hearted, seductive, moody, intense. Or Dragon, I'm looking here described as energetic, warm-hearted, charismatic, lucky at love, egotistic, natural-born leaders. Yuntai Wang, what should we make of that? It can look on its surface quite charming and yet like pure superstition. I mean, why would it be that somebody born in a particular year would have a particular character? Do you give credence to that or not?
That's the puzzle I'm still trying to figure out, because my daughter Isabel was born in Boston in the last year of Dragon, which is 2000.
Right.
And as you know, a lot of Chinese try to have babies in that year. To have a dragon baby is a good thing. Like I said, I'm still trying to detect any traces of dragon in Isabel, my daughter.
So what do you see? Is she a dragon character?
She's certainly developing into something. You know, she's a very imaginative and a creative mind. And whether or not she'll be lucky in love, we have to wait and see. She's only 12.
Right. And this is not just any dragon year. I don't know how this works exactly, but this is a special year of the dragon. This is the year of the water dragon. What does that mean, Yuntai Wang?
I think Jonathan may know better than I do, since he's an expert in this. But as far as I know, that the Yellow Dragon, by my experience, this past 24 years, watching China to rise from the aftermath of the Tiananmen, as I left the country as a result of that. And I remember, that's why early on I mentioned the song, the Descendants of the Dragon, because it was right in that year, a few months after Tiananmen Square, and I was still on campus at Peking University, and it was a night of a very pale moon, and I was looking at the moon, at the bottom of the pond on campus, swimming pool. And there was a fellow student singing, songs on his guitar. He was singing kind of out of tune. But one of the songs he was singing was exactly Hou De Jin's Descendants of the Dragon, Long De Chuan Ren. And it goes something like, even though, I'm wearing a Western-style suit, my heart is still Chinese heart. It was a very sad, kind of weepy song. And when I was looking at it, I just felt, if China was a dragon, the dragon is really, it's kind of dead or, somewhere hidden at the bottom of the muddy pond. But that's the image that
back in 1989. But today, it looks like a dragon for sure.
Exactly, the dragon obviously has soared into the sky, and that's really something kind of that's amazing in many ways.
What about it now? You've been in China recently after all the years of cultural revolution and the rest. If we were in China today, would we see people at temples praying, looking after their fortunes and all that sort of thing, Mr. Wang?
Yes, absolutely. That's the odd thing. I think people call that superstition, but it's a cultural belief, and a culture is really something, is a way of life. You don't really have to believe in it as a dogma in order to practice it. So it's really something you do.
A way of life, even if you don't actually believe it. This is very nuanced, and we're going to dig on in to exactly what that means. Jonathan Lee, a way of life, even if you don't believe it. That can sound like a contradiction.
It can, but it isn't, because it's more about practice. Chinese spirituality, Chinese religion, is not so much about the theos, ideas and words, but rather about what you do. about your practices. But if I can go back to this water dragon, it's mm-hmm. based on this idea of yin and yang, mm-hmm. the dynamics of opposites, and also infused into this is the idea of the five elements, the theories of the five elements of water, earth, metal, fire, and wood, all working together within this cosmos. So there are five dragons, you know, that represents each animal. And the water dragon is a nuanced dragon because dragons are powerful, very powerful. But and so it's a yang force, right, a positive force.
Okay.
And so with the water, water is the yin element. And so what water will do and what the water dragon will do for this dragon year is to soften the effects of this year. In terms of growth, in terms of levels, degrees of intensity of things that might happen in the world.
Jonathan Lee, hold the thought there. If you'd be good enough, a whole lot of people celebrating the Lunar New Year, the Chinese New Year, Spring Festival right now around the world, in China and in many, many other locations. Yuntae Wong in Santa Barbara, California, author of Charlie Chan. It's great to have you with us for a few minutes today. Thanks so much for joining us, Mr. Wong.
Thank you.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the Year of the Dragon, a big Chinese New Year today, and the way ancient Chinese tradition, thinking, astrology still work their way into modern life right now. Here, last night in Beijing, fireworks for ringing in the Year of the Dragon. You can join the conversation today. Chinese listeners, Chinese Americans, how are you celebrating the new year, the spring festival, the year of the dragon? Are you not celebrating? And how do old Chinese traditions of astrology, feng shui, fortune telling play out in life now, today? Has all that been left behind, or does it still have its place, its role, its influence? Chinese tuned in last night on television, online. All kinds of spring festival, New Year greetings there. Among those who were talking to the Chinese last night, Warren Buffett, the billionaire, American investor and philanthropist with a big investment in Chinese railways these days. He was on the state-sponsored television website or on TV with this message for the Chinese people.
Hello, I'm Warren Buffett, and I'd like to wish all the people in China a happy New Year and this Year of the Dragon. Your country's accomplished amazing things, and the best is yet to come.
It's kind of incredible. Along with Bill Gates, this is a name, Warren Buffett, that many Chinese know. And he didn't just wish them well. China's big, it's rich, it's important. Warren Buffett sang for them. I've been working on the railroad.
Dinah, won't you blow? Dinah, won't you blow? Dinah, won't you blow your horn, your horn? Dinah, won't you blow? Dinah, won't you blow? Dinah, won't you blow your horn? Shishi.
Kind of incredible. You know you've arrived when American billionaires will pluck their ukulele and sing for you on New Year's Day. Warren Buffett there on Chinese television and online last night. Wow, really great. Jonathan Lee joins us from San Francisco today. He's at San Francisco State University and co-editor of the Encyclopedia of Asian American Folklore and Folk Life. Also with us today from Dalton, Georgia, is Baogang Guo. He's professor of political science, director of the Center for International Education at Dalton State College in Georgia. Born in China, takes his American students and faculty to his hometown every year. Baogang Guo, thank you very much for being with us.
Hey, Tom. Good morning.
Good morning. Wonderful to have you. And with me in the studio, and we're honored to have her, is the great Chinese-American writer Gish Jin. Her most recent book is World and Town. She's also author of The Love Wife and Mona in the Promised Land. Second-generation Chinese-American often writes about family and cultural identity. Gish Jin, thank you so much for being with us.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Give us a sense of the nuance of this. Here we see a billion-plus Chinese really paying attention to this in China itself, many, many more around the world. This is ancient tradition and ways of looking at the world and thinking. On the other hand, it works its way into very modern circumstances these days. What's the hold of these ways of thinking? How strong is it or how forgotten, Gish?
Well, I have to say, in my family, it's still very much alive. My parents did immigrate probably 60 years ago to the United States.
Mm-hmm. So from Shanghai.
From Shanghai. Mm-hmm. So it's been a long time. And I think that many people might think that by now all the Chinese traditions would be gone.
Yeah, yeah.
But in my family, I have to say they're very much alive. And it's very interesting how they're transmitted. You know, I was just at Chinese New Year dinner last night in New York. And every year, my mother makes a hot pot, and there are certain things in it. And she holds everything up, and she says, you know, these are the gold thread needle, you know, gold thread noodles and this and that. But you can see a lot of the Chinese ideas in those items. Like, I'm thinking, well, how do I know what it means to be Chinese? And one of the reasons is that, you know, my mother will pick up the shrimp, and she will say, "Wan wen chun," and she will say, "It's important. May you, if you come upon any obstacles, may you be able to go around.
Be as flexible as the shrimp in the water in the sea, or
it's
or
no, because it's because of the shape of the shrimp. Mm-hmm. So that literally, you can imagine going around in this way. Mm-hmm. Which, if anyone who knows anything about Chinese culture will recognize that as a very Chinese idea that you don't go
work around the obstacle.
That's right.
Don't bang your head against the brick wall.
That's right. No colliding. Go around. And I'm thinking, well, that's how I know that. You know, also, of course, the shrimp is always served with the head and the tail. It's always served intact.
And not just the shrimp, but fish, everything.
Everything,
every New Year.
You've got
nothing
it.
Chopped, nothing cut
nothing
off.
Nothing chopped. And that's a very Chinese idea, which, you know, if you think about it, goes back thousands of years. I think when they look at the Tarim mummies that they found in Xinjiang, they found those Caucasian mummies and they found some Han Chinese mummies, both of them thousands of years ago. You know, the Caucasian mummies show signs of having undergone surgery for various things. None of the Han Chinese mummies had any signs of ever having been violated. It's a very fundamental idea, which, of course, again, if you know anything about China, you realize does play out politically. I mean, it's very much related to the way that the Chinese see Tibet, to Taiwan. You know, there's a sense that it
don't cut off these extended members as they see it. Maybe not the Tibetans.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. But there's a strong sense that it's an aesthetic sense. You know, there's a sense of what things should be properly, and that very much informs. I would say pretty much every arena of life.
Ba Gongguo, join us there from Georgia. I mean, of course, in Chinese cooking, plenty of chopping. It's for the New Year's Eve dinner that's not on because it's the wholeness people are looking for. So Gish Jen says maybe this is how she, as a second-generation Chinese, learned Chinese culture. I wonder, do you look at these, whether it's the astrological signs and years or these other icons of Chinese culture brought out particularly at New Year time, are these superstitions or are these symbols that sustain a culture over time?
Yeah, I see clearly there's a restoration of the Asian traditions and customs because now China is an affluent nation and people spend a lot of resources into this. I remember when I was young, you know, you fire firecrackers, but not that much. But today, you go
firecrackers,
back,
so the bang, bang, bang.
You go back home to Beijing and the city, and the loudness of sound is unbearable. You know, people just buying too much firecrackers. And, you know, in terms of the food, you know, they're all trying to make things much more, you know, meaningful. They got to have a fish on the table. And fish actually is, you know, sounds similar like prosper for next year. So you got to have fish on the table. And they will put a little sign on their door, happiness. But instead of putting the happiness in the right direction, they will put the word upside down. That also symbols the happiness will arrive without. I guess if you only know Chinese, you understand the meaning of it.
So bring the happiness on in, and not just that, but make sure the house is clean so you clean away so all the detritus of the outgoing year. Try and be sure your debts are paid off. It's a fresh start. People in almost any culture can understand relating that to the new year. Jonathan Lee in San Francisco, what's your sense of how these traditions survived the Maoist years in China, the Cultural Revolution in particular? I mean, I spent a lot of time in China and saw back in the day a lot of really damaged temples and traditional locations. Has it come back? Has it come back like it was in the old days? Is it changed now, Jonathan, these traditions?
Yeah. Well, these traditions, well, you know, when you look at at religion, the public religion, institutional religion, there were clear signs that they were destroyed during the Cultural Revolution. And many scholars during this period even argue through the mid-1980s that religion was dead in China, right? Because religion was considered superstition, mi xing. However, when you look at Chinese astrology, when you look at the celebration of Lunar New Year, which also happens in Korea and Japan and in Vietnam, right? And in Singapore, you know, it's much harder to, you know, to try to destroy because it's a way of life. It's in the fabric of everyday life. So I suspect that during the Cultural Revolutionary period, you know, Chinese New Year was still celebrated. Families still gathered together for dinners, you know, worshiped their ancestors, decorated their homes with flowers, cooked on before New Year's Eve, didn't cook on New Year's, you can't use knives or scissors, you can't clean.
Don't cut your hair on New Year's Day.
Don't wash your hair on New Year's Day. Yeah, because, you know, you're going to wash away your prosperity and your fortune for the coming year. So a lot of that is just ingrained in day-to-day activities. And so it's, you know, it's always been there. It's just a way of life. It's been a way of life for over 4,000 years. Right. But there is a revival of it in terms of the public display of these traditions in modern China. And a lot of it happened in the mid-1980s when overseas Chinese from Southeast Asia and from the United States went back to China, invested in temple building, invested in local village festivals.
In hometowns and so on.
In their hometowns and so on. And then over the years, it just became more public and more public and more public. And so now they kind of are situated in a vexing kind of relationship with state-sponsored religious festivals during the Chinese New Year season. And it speaks volume, I think, of these traditions, these folklore and these mythology and this way of life for contemporary Chinese people.
It's old. It's powerful. We're looking today at how it still plays out in a very, very contemporary China. Jonathan Lee, Bagong Guo, Gish Jen with me in the studio. Please stand by. We have lots of callers here. Let me go first to Kim in Providence, Rhode Island. Kim, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I have two things. One, just a statement, and then another a question. I thought it was interesting that you seem so surprised that for many Chinese, they continue to follow traditions despite not really feeling very deeply religious. And I think that's kind of the essence of American Christmas and Easter. So I don't find that at all surprising. And certainly there are other traditions that we follow, things that we do that we think of as good luck.
Well, you're certainly right that many Americans have both a secular and a religious ways of thinking about those holidays. And for many, there's little religion sometimes around those holidays. Of course, there can be as well. What's your own circumstance, Kim?
And my question is actually for your guests. I'm just curious. I'm fascinated to be learning all about the significance of the year of the dragon because I'm about 2 weeks away from my due date. And I'm going to give to a baby born in the year of the dragon. And I just wonder, I am somebody who does a lot of international work in my life, and so my plan is to, you know, expose my child to all the kind of beautiful cultural things that I've learned from the different places that that I've lived in the world. And I wonder, does it count for my child if they're not Chinese? Is it significant that they are born in the year of the dragon? And how would your guest recommend that I kind of introduce this to my child? Is there something that I should tell them about what makes them special about when they were born?
Kim, you're a woman of the world, and we'll pick it right up here. That's really interesting. Gish Jen, all right, here's Kim. She's not Chinese. She's going to have a baby born in a couple of weeks, year of the dragon. Does it count for her, Gish, or is it, you know?
I'm just listening to this question. I'm just thinking of what an American question that is. And right here we see.
And what a 21st century question
as well. Exactly. You know, I think that you know, the whole idea that there is something special about your child as an individual and that this is somehow related to being born of the year of the dragon is very, very, very counter to, I think, to Chinese ideas. So, Chinese...
Why counter? Because I'm reading here about Chinese flocking to fertility clinics. They're trying to have their baby born in this year. Their baby, their particular child in this year of the dragon.
And they want their child to be part of this cohort.
Yes.
But it is not something which is individually special about the child. Do you understand what I'm saying?
This caller says,
yeah. How can I tell my daughter that there's something special about her?
But if children born in the year of the dragon are supposed to be energetic and warm-hearted and charismatic and lucky at love, those are individual traits, also cohort traits. No?
It's a little bit hard to explain, but I think maybe the way that the caller asked her question is to suggest that this is something special about my child. Mm-hmm. And although these children are all special because they're part of this group, these are not special characteristics of them as individuals as we understand them in the West.
Well, that's interesting. I mean, I don't know, because I've heard Chinese friends sit around and talk about each other the way they are and are not true to the sort of stereotypes of their year of birth, their zodiac sign. I mean, Jonathan Lee, here's Kim. You know, we're in a globalized world, and she wonders if the Chinese zodiac applies to her non-Chinese descended American child. Do you look at these as universal kind of ideas, or is it something just for descendants of China?
That's a good question. It's whimsical. I like to think about it in terms of global culture, right? My partner is white. And he's born in the year of the rabbit. And when I think of rabbits and the qualities of the rabbit, he matches up with the rabbit really well. He's diplomatic. He's intelligent. He's resourceful. He puts fun before work. He likes to think of ideas, right? And he's ying. And I'm a dragon. So I'm supposed to be powerful, charismatic,
right.
You know, the big bang, fiery, right?
Yep,
hot
yep.
temper, temperamental. Yep. And I see some of those qualities of dragon in me. To answer the caller, I would just share Chinese folklore with her daughter. I mean, the story of why the dragon came into fifth is actually a beautiful story. You know, he came in fifth, and when he arrived, you know, there was a race. There was this race for the first 12 animal to be representatives.
He comes after ox, tiger, rabbit, and then dragon.
So, yeah, tiger, rabbit, and then dragon. And when the dragon arrived, the emperor said, why are you so late? Because you can just flown over the river.
Yeah.
And he said, well, the reason why I'm so late is because I saw some people needing water, so I stopped to help them out by making it rain. Because dragon arrives with thunder and lightning and rain. And then he says, as I was flying across the river, I saw a rabbit on a log just floating there, not moving. So I blew a gust of wind to get him across. And so what you see here is that you see this external animal that looks really rough and scary and big, but he has a really soft heart, right? And so for that, you know, he also is very compassionate. And so that story reveals certain elements of the dragon.
Tom Ashbrook, this is On Point. We're talking this hour about the Year of the Dragon, a big Chinese New Year today, and the way ancient Chinese tradition, thinking, astrology, and more still work their way into modern life. Now, here's the sound of the traditional dragon dance, part of the weekend's Year of the Dragon festivities in Sydney, Australia. It is worldwide and huge in China right now. What's your experience? How much does this realm still matter, still come into play in Chinese culture today? And what do you think? As China rises, will we all know what year it is? Year of the dragon, rooster, snake, goat? I'm joined in the studio today and really honored to be by Gish Jen, author of The Love Wife, Mona in the Promised Land, and her most recent World and Town, second-generation Chinese-American family out of Shanghai. With us from Dalton, Georgia, Professor Bao Gangguo, political science, director of the Center for International Education at Dalton State College. And from San Francisco, Jonathan H.X. Lee is with us from San Francisco State University, professor of Asian American Studies there, co-editor of the Encyclopedia of Asian American Folklore and Folk Life. Lots of response online here, Gish and all. Here, Jim writes, Tom, I want to have a dragon baby. If it were to be a boy, I would name him either Jackie or Jet, maybe as in Chan or Lee. Bruce is already reserved for my first kid. My wife, not too happy. Understandable, but I love the Chinese New Year spirit, and I love the tradition. Nothing in American culture can veer me off this wonderful ancient tradition. Let's go to Adam, calling from Boston. Adam, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Hi. I just wanted to talk about I actually do the lion dance.
Oh, great.
I'm half Chinese, so I was raised by my white mother, and we did bare minimum for Chinese New Year. I don't know anything about, what your guest was talking about with the shrimp and, those kind of detailed traditions. But I was exposed to it when I joined a Kung Fu school in Chinatown at Wuching Wei Crane, and that's where I was exposed to, say, bowing to the ancestors, burning paper money, and doing the lion dance, which is an intrinsic part of the New Year because it's about the lion fighting off the lin, which is the monster, which has the same name as year in Chinese, which comes, is supposed to come every year, cause disaster, and this lion or other monster, depends on which story, sometimes it's another lin or a newer year that fights off the bad.
Right. And so you do that very athletic dance. Do you find yourself drawing some kind of, spiritual or emotional sustenance from this tradition, Adam?
I guess when I was an adolescent, I did find it, I considered it more of a religion type of thing. As I'm older, I kind of got away, I'm less superstitious and stuff like that. But that's the interesting thing is there's some people that take it very seriously as a ritual and others that take it more as a performing art.
Right.
Our school does, there is a whole ritual involved with bringing that lion to life, which involves chicken blood that's painted on the eyes and the mouth. And, there's kind of a prayer or saying that this lion will not have power from heaven and earth. So you could see it as a very, pagan, shamanistic ritual. Mm-hmm. Or a lot of people just see it as, a dance.
Hey, Adam, let me ask you, if I may, because this is interesting. You're half Chinese. You're clearly enjoying this, and you're carrying on a tradition. To our earlier caller, Kim's question of whether or not this might relate to her non-Chinese baby. It sounds funny, but do you feel this relating only to your Chinese side, or does it feel universally applicable to you, Adam?
I think it's universally applicable, especially with the, they call it Baji, when you're born, what time, what date, and what will happen. That astrology is supposed to be kind of for everyone, not just for ethnically Chinese people. And a lot of people were saying how they didn't live up to their the personality of their year. But the thing is, it's not just the year you're born. There's also the month and hour, because actually the hours in the day, not exactly hours, it's 2 hours. They're called season. There's 12 seasons in 24-hour period, and those are also dragon, rat, pig. So, you could always say, maybe I'm not real. I'm born in the year of the dragon, but I was born in the hour of the pig. So it's kind of a combination of all those things that make up your personality.
It's a complicated matrix. Adam, keep on dancing, and I appreciate your call. Gish Jen, I'm really curious what you think as China becomes more and more part of the global cultural scene. Do you see these things flowing out beyond the Chinese community? Is that inevitable, or is there not the sort of, the Western tradition was evangelical, Chinese not so much? Nevertheless, these are hallmarks of what is a very prominent global economy at the very least, and increasingly culture as well now.
You know, I can see it becoming a style, you know. So I can see that it can become kind of a theme in Bloomingdale's, you know.
Right,
I can
see Red Lanterns.
Exactly. I can see it becoming T-shirts. And but I actually I think that the culture itself is also, you know, a very people used to say that, you know, that in many, many couples, when a Chinese person marries out, that frequently the partner becomes sinicized. I know that that definitely happened in my case. It doesn't always happen, but frequently happens. So the culture is a very strong thing. That said, I don't actually think that, you know, by sort of looking at Chinese astrology, that you are actually getting at what it means to be Chinese. And so, I mean, so I think that you can adopt kind of the trappings and stay very much what you were without the trappings, the same way that, you know, the Chinese can wear blue jeans and they can all be wearing blue jeans. And yet, as an American, when you see them in your blue jeans, there's something different, and the jeans mean something different to them than it meant to us.
Of course, so, the deeper you go, I mean, if you do the lion dance, the deeper you go, the more you may feel of it.
I think the deeper you go, the more you may feel of it. I think that certainly doing the actions makes a difference. And yet I think that there are many things about what it means to be Chinese that will not be spread in this way.
Of course, everybody paying attention as China rises, not just Warren Buffett here, is the President of the United States, Obama, on a video last week offering his best wishes to everybody celebrating the Lunar Chinese New Year.
This year, as Americans here at home and around the world welcome the Year of the Dragon, it's important to remember that our country is stronger because of our diversity. We're richer because of the different cultures that make up this country. So to all those celebrating the Lunar New Year, I wish you and your loved ones peace, prosperity, and good health.
The president who says, Year of the Dragon. Diana calling from Cambridge, Massachusetts. Diana, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I'm very excited to be able to listen to your show. It's been great.
Thank you. What do you think about all this?
I'm actually half Chinese. I was born in Taiwan, and my mother and father came to actually Vermont, and I was raised in Vermont.
Yeah.
And I have a son who was born Year of the Dragon 12 years ago.
In the year 2000?
Yes. I had recently heard that that particular Year of the Dragon was considered a golden Year of the Dragon, and I was just curious if Gish Jen knew anything about that. And I'm also reading her book.
Which one are you reading, Diana?
Her latest book. I saw her at a reading in Newton not too long
ago. Oh, World in Town. And I'm seeing here, Diana, that you were actually in Taiwan in that year 2000. Did you see a lot of pregnant women around with the big year?
I did. And my pregnancy was not planned for the Year of the Dragon, so I couldn't believe my eyes. I thought I should have started counting when I was there, because it was incredible. There were many, many, many women pregnant. at least that's what I thought.
That's amazing. Diana, reading, World in Town now, I guess. We're knitting it all together here with Gish Jen in our panel. Let me get one more, and I'll come to your question on that year 2000. Jason in Williamsburg, Virginia. Jason, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi, Tom.
Hi.
It kind of piggybacks a little bit maybe off of the last caller, and maybe considered a little bit American, like the first caller.
Okay.
Question.
Yep.
And I was also born the Year of the Dragon in 76, and I have a son on the way. And my wife and I were kind of just having fun with it, and you know, looking up all the different traditions and things. And she came across something that said that this year, as well as people turning 36, people turning 24 and 12, it's a year of bad luck for dragons. And I thought that was kind of interesting, and also selfishly thinking, I've waited 12 years, and man, I want a good luck year.
Okay.
Seeing if you're
all those multiples of 12.
Callers could speak to that.
Okay, Jason, thanks. I'm not sure who to go to here. Jonathan, let me come first to you. We get deep into the numerology here, but is there something about, you know, people who were born in the Year of Dragon that's not lucky in this Year of the Dragon?
No, it's not that, you know, it's unlucky, but if he was born in 76, he'd be a fire dragon. Fire dragon are very powerful, and they can be reckless. And in the year of the dragon, the recklessness can be amplified, but luckily it's the water dragon year, so that will soften the recklessness, right? And so so what it tells someone born in the year of dragon 76 is that in this year of the water dragon, I need to be more careful. And if I am more careful and thoughtful, I will prosper, right? And, you know, and then for the 2000 baby, that was the metal year, metal dragon, gold dragon. And metal, you know, metal will ground, and it's so hard, and, you know, and the hardness symbolizes determination. So really it speaks to a kind of potential characteristic for people born in this year that if they put their mind to something and become very determined to do something, they will succeed. You know, again, it's this idea of knowing some of your personality's traits that you can use then to maximize your life potential and reach your destiny.
Guess, Jen, I'm thinking about your reader here, Diana as well, who was in Taiwan in 2000, another year of the dragon, who saw so many pregnant women there. No doubt there was a surge. It was considered a big year. I wonder what you think about that intensity that would lead people to plan their childbearing lives around this calendar. And then also, I keep watching your face as we get American callers, you know, here eager to kind of join in the party of Chinese culture and tradition. And I still come back to this question of how much it's open to everybody and how much it's not.
Well, it's so interesting. I mean, you know, as I listen, you know, I've heard all these stories myself, you know, this represents that and that represents this. And yet I have to say, you know, as a family where Chineseness was on the table all the time, this was never emphasized, you know. And I think that this is just like, it's just, you know, I'm certain, sure there are places in the United States where, you know, they see Tebow out there, you know.
Tebowing away.
Tebowing away. And they feel like, yes, and I understand that, and that's part of my life. And then there are others of us who see him Tebowing and feel nothing, you know. And,
right.
And I'm having kind of the same reaction.
You're going back and forth on that.
Yeah, well, I'm saying, you know, because I know, I mean, it's the same way I know about Tebow, but I don't feel that.
Right.
You know, when I hear about the astrology, that's not Chineseness as I understand it.
On the other hand, you know, even in your family, let's say if feng shui questions came on the table, were people blasé about those, or could they have real weight?
My cousins could be quite serious about it, I will say, you know. But I will say that, you know, even though, you know, I spent a time in Hong Kong, as you have, and, you know, I've seen people get very excited about, for instance, you know, the number 8, you know, Bob, because it sounds like prosperity and so on. It seems to me that what actually happens, you know, behind the kind of the sense that everybody is doing something is the sense that this thing becomes kind of a status symbol. And the number 8.
I had a license plate. Yee, ba, yee. Everybody wanted to buy
God.
It from me.
That's right. And so people, and then you'll hear these stories that like, oh, you know, like, you know, somebody paid $100,000 to have the number 8, you know, 888 on their cell phone. And I think people will conclude from that, oh, the Chinese are so superstitious that they really believe that it's worth that kind of money.
So what is it then? That's real money.
It isn't so much that as it has become a desirable thing. And the same way that we might break out a very expensive bottle of champagne for a certain occasion, it isn't that champagne means that so much to us as that we need to have the expensive bottle of champagne. It's very complicated is what I'm trying to say.
Bakang Guo, I have an email here from a listener, Rich, who's of Vietnamese descent and says they celebrate Lunar New Year there as well. Essentially, it's Chinese. Many go to Buddhist temples, have their fortunes told. One very popular fortune-telling game is where you shake a cup full of sticks that are numbered, and numbers correspond to fortune. Ranked, you know, very good, good, middle, bad, very bad. If we go to China today in this Chinese New Year, Year of the Dragon season, Bao Guangguo, would we see that Chinese sort of shaking out the fortune stick at temples, or is that gone by the wayside?
I would see more and more people like that, you know, doing the go to temple and get their luck from those kind of different religious ceremonies.
And do they take it seriously, or is it just sort of just something you go through the motions?
Well, I see, some really take it very seriously. Mostly just give a try and don't believe in it.
but it's certainly part of an old, old tradition. Jonathan Lee, what do you think? More of the world going to be tuned into this as China's prominence rises and rises?
Well, tune into China, not tune into Chinese astrology per se. You know, the Lunar New Year celebration and the zodiac is shared among China, Korea, Japan, as well as Vietnam. In Vietnam, instead of the rabbit, it's the cat, right? And so, you know, it's. I would like to caution just using this word superstition, because the word superstition has had a really a big negative impact on Chinese culture, because it was this word was adopted when China, you know, started to modernize.
By the Chinese communists in particular.
That's right. Mm-hmm. That's right. And so anything that was considered old, traditional folklore was considered superstition. And so there was an attempt to destroy it. And so really, it's part of Chinese culture and part of Chinese culture that informs the way people live their lives daily, right? And it's just a way of life.
We're getting a more subtle understanding of that this hour, and it's really a pleasure to do it on the first day of the Year of the Dragon. Jonathan H.X. Lee, co-editor of the Encyclopedia of Asian American Folklore and Folklife, thank you very much for joining us, Jonathan.
Thank you.
Ba Gong Guo in Dalton, Georgia, at Dalton State College, thank you, Mr. Guo, for being here.
My pleasure.
And Gish Jin, what an honor and a pleasure to have you with us today, author of The Love Wife and World and Town. Thank you so much for coming in.
It's been my pleasure.
Listeners, thanks for joining us. A little more from China celebration last night. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.